Good afternoon and welcome to the Sitka Nature Show. This is your host, Matt. I want to thank you for joining me here in the second weekend of December 2025. We are a week away from the winter solstice, and that means the darkest time of the year for sure. We're losing less than a minute per day now through next Sunday, and then we will start gaining daylight. Of course, slowly at first and then ramping up in the coming weeks and months until we're gaining as much as 5 minutes a day or close to 5 minutes a day around the spring equinox. But we've got a ways yet before we get there. And in the meantime, we do have our winter season here. It's time birds are mostly settled in by now. It seems like maybe there's a few that are moving around, but in my experience, kind of mid-December through much of January, it feels like things are settled where they're settled. And as the daylight starts ramping up later in January, you get a few local birds moving around a bit more, it seems like. But if you are seeing some unusual birds at your feeder, I'd love to hear about them. We have the Harris's sparrow is still continuing. It was seen this past week. I haven't been hearing about too many other unusual birds, but if you're seeing something that seems unfamiliar to you, I'd love to hear about it. Please feel free to send me an email, sitkanature@gmail.com, or you can hop on my website, sitkanature.org, and leave me a comment there. This is the season for the annual Christmas bird count. It's been happening here in Sitka since the early 70s. And as has been a tradition here on the Sitka Nature Show over the last decade or more of Decembers, I have invited our local coordinators, Victoria Vosberg and Jen Cedarleaf, to come visit with me in the studio. I recorded this conversation with them earlier this month, and we talked about this year's bird count and some of our past experiences, some of their birding over the year. But we'll go ahead and join the conversation with Victoria telling us the details of this year's count.
We are going to do the pre-count meeting and slideshow on Wednesday, December 17th at the Raptor Center, starting at 6 p.m. Count week goes Wednesday, December 17th through Tuesday, December 23rd. And the actual count will occur on Saturday, December 20th.
Saturday, December 20th. So that's all day, but in practice, that means that's actually like the shortest day of the year. So
yeah, we picked a good one this year.
Taking it easy on ourselves a little bit. Yes. Not that it makes too much difference,
yeah, but right.
Sunrise will be at something like 8:30 and sunset will be something like 3:30.
Yeah.
So limited daylight, and if even more limited if it happens to be one of those days when it's, you know, heavy clouds and
when the street lights are on all day.
Yeah, yeah. So mm-hmm. We'll see. But there'll be birds around. There's always birds around.
There's a ton of gulls out there right now that we're looking at.
A ton of gulls as we're recording this. Yeah. Yeah. Late December is kind of, it's getting to be, like, my sense is things have generally settled down by late December, that waterfowl that's going to be here is here. And it seems like there's a month or two kind of from early to mid-December into probably late January where stuff just kind of is hunkered down and I guess existing, trying to do its best to survive the dark lean times. And then things start moving around again in February a little bit. Not migration per se, but like the waterfowl, it seems like you'll suddenly see a duck that shows up that hadn't been around before and it was probably in the area but not where you just saw it.
Yeah.
And then later in February the gulls seem like they start showing up, and I've heard eagles start showing up then as well. And that always seems associated with herring getting ramping up, and then, you know, pretty soon we're back into the thick of things in March and April. But yeah, Christmas bird count is an annual tradition for us here. And anything specific? So the 17th at 6, I'll be doing a slideshow. I assume that I'll be doing a slideshow.
Yeah, did you
that
ask?
Is correct.
Did you ask me?
I might have skipped that part this year.
Yeah,
I just assume, you know.
Yeah. Well, fair assumption. I usually try to add a few new pictures each year, or replace a few old pictures with new pictures. We'll see what happens this year.
And as a reminder, everyone is invited to see the slideshow, not just people who are doing the Christmas bird count.
And so mm-hmm. that's at the Raptor Center.
Yes.
If you're just interested in hearing about birds and getting a little bit of the history of the Christmas bird count, if you're interested in participating, you don't have to know much about birds to participate. It helps to know what a bird is. Generally
speaking, they have feathers.
They have feathers. You know what a bird looks like. And then sometimes, often, we can find somebody that has some experience that's willing to have somebody come along that's you know, new to the thing. I know that's been something that's happened in the past. And so,
I also really like to encourage feeder counts for people who are new to birding, to count the birds at their feeder, because that's a really important resource.
Yeah, so feeder counts is, maybe you could explain how a feeder count works as opposed to, or in contrast to the sort of regular counting that mm-hmm. folks are doing.
So for those of you who have feeders, you've probably noticed you're kind of getting the same birds all the time. So when you do a feeder count, you don't count every bird that you see in as an individual. You count to the largest group that you see. So you've got 10 juncos that come to your feeder at 9 a.m., then at noon, 12 juncos come, then at 2 p.m., 5 juncos come. Your feeder count is going to be that high count of juncos, so 12 juncos for the day, because we go under the assumption that it's the same juncos coming to your feeder all the time.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different than if you're doing a walking or a driving count, where we really are counting every bird that we see.
So we're assuming we're moving faster than the birds when we're moving around.
Right.
And assuming they're coming back at the feeders.
Right.
The other advantage to a feeder count is there's a limited set of species you're likely to see.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So at feeders around here, we see juncos, song sparrows.
Sometimes fox sparrows.
Yep. You get the Eurasian collared dove at yours.
Yeah, there's a few feeders that, we have had up to 18, I think, is the high count that we've had there.
Whoa.
I think,
really? Holy cow.
I think some other folks not too far away from me have had 30 or 40 at times.
Recently?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
I think it depends on if they have food out or something, but the numbers of collared doves are definitely trending upward again over the last couple of years, so it'll be interesting to see. I know a few years ago there was a bunch of them here, and then they just disappeared.
And then they
were
gone, yeah.
So,
and that goes back to the importance of feeder counts. Is we had so many Eurasian collared doves in town, but they weren't really getting counted because they were going to a feeder that was behind a home that no one could see except for the owner. And fortunately, she came into the vet clinic and I asked her to count. And so we got this giant jump in Eurasian collared doves. And then the boss of the Christmas bird count in Alaska called me and said, "Are you sure about this?" And I had to explain what happened.
Yeah. Well, it's been interesting. The sharp-shinned hawk is in the neighborhood as well, around my neighborhood, and it's taken out two or three collared doves in my yard, as well as pigeons. I'm presumably getting them elsewhere.
That's a tough little bird.
And I don't know if it's getting small birds. I mean, they hunt small birds, clearly.
Yeah, but why get a small bird when there's a pigeon right there?
Yeah.
I know. Well, and then the other thing is that they can fly off with a small bird.
That's true.
If they get a small bird and I'm not watching, then I probably won't see it.
Right.
If they get a pigeon, they're there in my yard for 3 hours because that's how long it takes them to eat the whole thing. Pretty much, they're just stripping it away for a while.
Yeah. Oh, we forgot to mention chickadees.
Chickadees at the feeders, starlings.
And sometimes we see red-breasted nuthatches too, but not very often.
Uh-uh.
And not really at feeders.
Yeah, red-breasted nuthatch is one that I had feeder when I was kind of first getting started in 2005, and there was a red-breasted nuthatch that started coming to my feeder and was just there all winter, and I was like, oh, well, that's cool, you know, I didn't have any idea, and somebody else was like, I've never seen one of those, I'd really like them. I said, just come by, it's there. And
you didn't know how special it was.
Yeah, I didn't know that I have never had a red-breasted nuthatch come to a feeder since then in 20 years.
Kind of like when I saw the killdeer, and I'm like, oh, those are just garbage birds. And Matt was like, what? Killdeer?
Yeah, I don't see killdeer very often. I didn't see one this year. I haven't seen one this year. I guess there's still time, but it's
I do not have a killdeer on my Alaska list.
Oh, you've never seen a killdeer in Alaska?
No. Can you believe
that? I've seen multiple. What are you people doing?
Call me.
Not here. I've seen them other places too, but I've seen them twice.
I'll try to remember that. They usually show up somewhere. I mean, they probably move through every year in small numbers, but I've seen them at the park, on the beach at the park, and I've seen them at the airport.
I think I saw that one that I didn't tell you about over on Alice Island before they built the housing over there. So
yeah, Alice Island isn't quite as birdy a habitat as it used to be when
it's
it was full
sad.
Of alders.
Very sad.
Right.
But they're growing us some new habitat there as they fill in the lagoon and give the alders a few years to grow. Probably not too many more years, two or three more years, and that'll be assuming they leave it alone, which it seems like they probably will over time as they just keep working to fill in the lagoon there. So
how many birds do you have on your list?
My Alaska list?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm up to 200. With this year's birds, I got 3 new birds this year. So I'm at 262, which on the state checklist, there's on eBird, I'm at, I think, 263, because there's a Vega goal, which hasn't been split in Alaska. There's a whole thing about, you know, whose list you're using in the Alaska checklist for now is divergent somewhat from the ABA area. I think they don't include McKay's bunting, for example. And I think eBird
didn't
may
they
still...
the buntings?
I think so.
And McKay's?
Part of that is coming through the museum and the taxonomist that works there is the curator there and kind of maintains this checklist. And so that is part of what's going on is that they're like, well, we don't think that there's sufficient evidence to have these be split. And for a long time, Thayer's goal wasn't, on the Alaska State Checklist, even though it was in eBird and elsewhere, it was considered a separate species from Iceland goal. The Alaska Checklist Committee was like, nope. And it turned out that the ABA eventually went that way. So in taxonomy, there's, you know, everybody has their kind of opinions.
So now there's no Thayer's goal?
Thayer's goal is a subspecies of Iceland goal. So
with ABA too?
Yeah. Oh. So on eBird, they're just considered subspecies.
Well, that's a poop.
Yeah. So if you counted the red poles got lumped last year, and so
right after you got your hoary.
I never got to count the hoary on my list.
Yeah, but they added pigeon, right?
They added
the rock
pigeon.
Dove. Sorry, rock dove.
So yeah, rock dove has been added to the state list. It's ongoing in flux. New birds show up. Birds taxonomic understanding shifts. For example, there's eastern and western warbling vireos now. So the eastern warbling vireo is considered a different species from western, but good luck telling them apart.
Yeah, well, and they lumped the Pacific sloop flycatcher back in with the western flycatcher?
Yeah, so the western is the current. So it was Cordilleran and Pacific slope that had been split, and now they're remerged again into western flycatcher. That didn't really affect me because it was always Pacific slopes here.
Yeah.
But the warbling vireo is an interesting one because our expected one, of course, would be western. We don't get a lot of warbling vireos here. But in the fall, when you have vagrants coming from elsewhere, then you're like, well, maybe. So I have one picture. I have one warbling vireo I saw in late October one year that I got a bunch of photos of. But at least for now, there's not sufficient understanding of whether and how they can be differentiated simply by plumage. So, you know, range is the primary thing.
It's like a metal arc.
Yeah.
Where are you?
Yeah. The voice is different.
Yeah.
Did you see a mangrove yellow warbler recently?
I did not.
Where did I see that?
That would be very surprising. That's another split.
Well, I know. That's why I had to ask you about it.
Somebody reported one? I mean,
maybe I dreamed it. I thought it was crazy.
I've seen a mangrove yellow warbler.
So mangrove yellow warblers are residents along the Gulf Coast.
I haven't seen one in the U.S. I've seen one in Costa Rica.
So they're in the Gulf of Mexico kind of thing, and they, I think, are non-migratory. But I think there's been some reports that where one kind of wandered around a little bit, but not like to Alaska.
Yeah.
But I don't know that much about it because it's like far away from ours. Are now, I guess, technically northern yellow warblers is what they call them, with the split that they did this year. So every year there's a little bit of fussing around with the checklist and species getting split or lumped or new species showing up from Asia. But
are we
or
still
Europe.
On the we're going to change everyone's names kick?
I don't know. I haven't. That probably is working in the background. Things are slow, but
apparently I'm not keeping up with this stuff well enough because some of these things are new to me.
Fair enough. It's not a full-time job to keep up with, but it certainly requires some attention if you're interested, and no need to be interested. You just go with what eBird. But you don't use eBird, do you? So
I am not an eBirder.
So you're
I'm an iNaturalister.
Yeah, you're gonna. Well, that it gets changed there too. But I guess when you submit your Christmas bird counts, then they show up in what you're allowed to submit there. Probably not a lot of different things, but the name. So, like, it's no longer winter wren to go back to a change from a few years ago. It's now you're submitting for Pacific wren. for example.
Things, they don't go backwards and change things.
They leave them the way they
are. The old records. Yeah, but I mean, going forward,
we still
when
have
you submit.
Fish crows on our list.
Yeah, that must have been somebody just clicked the wrong button or something.
I think they were from a few years or something. Or was it just the one?
There's one year where it's a bunch of fish crows,
yeah,
I remember.
It's like, oh, man.
Well, it's interesting. I found some early 1800s accounts. Von Kittlitz was a German naturalist who traveled with Russians around the world and spent some time in Sitka, 5 weeks in Sitka. And one of the things that he taught, of course, at the time, you know, they're understood. They were just like, oh, this is all new to them, you know, in the new world. And they're trying to describe it scientifically. And you know, he's trying to describe what he's seen relative to what he's familiar with. And I think he did call the crows here fish crows. And I think just assumed that they were probably the same species or something. And so you could imagine. But yeah, by the 1970s or 80s, whenever that happened, that was clearly a mistake of some sort. So. Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I ever will truly accept the American crow thing. I miss my little Northwestern crows. They're not the same.
I think they're considered subspecies still, but yeah.
They're not the same, though. Can't we just... I still call them Northwestern crows, but...
I just call them crows.
They're just cute.
Yeah. So it is, yeah, some of us care more about what things are called than others and get attached to various names, and then they change on us, and you're like, do we want to change them? We still have our old field guides. The field guides don't update either unless you buy a new one.
Update,
so
yeah.
It's kind of going with the old one.
It'd be interesting for new birders to go back and look at my first field guide. It has all these crazy names of birds that don't exist anymore.
Yeah, yeah, it is. That's one of the challenging things when they were referencing birds in this. He called a lot of things Zonotrichias, which are, that's a genus for white-crowned sparrows and golden-crowned sparrows and white-throated sparrows, and actually Harris's sparrow are all Zonotrichias, but like the juncos. And from the description, it was clear he was talking about juncos, just the behavior and how frequently he was finding them. But yeah, he called it a Zonotrichia. Because I guess that was kind of the big group that, you know, they were kind of putting everything into as they were first sort of trying to understand the bird fauna of North America coming from Europe. So yeah, it is an interesting interesting thing to consider all these bird changes. And I guess you all ask me my counts. I should ask you what. You know, how many birds do you have on your list?
So I am at 260 right now, and I saw three new birds this year, so I should have seen four new birds this year, but I didn't. I missed the, what was it, skylark, Eurasian skylark, Victoria saw, and already had seen out on ADAC. So I've just got three. I have the quick glimpse that we got of a common snipe on ADAC, and then the Dick Sissel that was at your feeder, and the Harris's sparrow.
Nice.
Those are my three new ones.
So you're then one ahead of me, continue to be one ahead of me. It seems like every year you manage to just get the same number of new birds as I do.
It's creeping above you. I wonder when we have very different birds, I'm sure, so.
Yeah, you've traveled a bit more than I have.
I'm sure I've got some that you don't have, and you've got some that I don't have, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. That's what with Connor, he caught up with me when he was working offshore.
Oh, yeah, because he got all those
working as a deckhand, but he wasn't deckhanding this year. And so this year we saw all the same new birds. He saw all the new birds that I saw, which is new for both of us. But he also saw a Western kingbird and a three-toed woodpecker, both of which I had seen before.
What?
The three-toed woodpecker was in Fish Bay, so not right along in town.
That is, right now, that's my nemesis bird.
Is that three-toed woodpecker?
My nemesis bird for many, many years was a long-eared owl, but now I found that one. And we're probably going to talk about this later, but we traveled to Colorado this year, and we were looking for three-toed woodpeckers and never found one, and I feel like I'm never going to see one.
Oh, so this is not just an Alaska bird for you.
It's a lifer.
Yeah, it would be
a lifer.
So the three-toed woodpecker, I saw one on Yacobi Island years and years ago. And then, this year there was the one up in Fish Bay. When we were in Anchorage, the trip that Connor and I made to ADAC, and we had the time in Anchorage, we went and looked for three-toed woodpecker and found a blackback woodpecker instead, which is actually a better bird for Anchorage and more challenging to get, but we didn't find the three-toed woodpecker. And then Connor was kind of disappointed, but I was like, you can get those around Sitka if you, you know, if you look around enough. Yeah. I'm not saying they're common, but, you know, they're around. Blackback would be pretty
really
unexpected.
Unusual, yeah.
So yeah, you did get that. So you got two birds that I already had. That makes it easier. And it's going to, theoretically, I can get some of the birds that he already has. However, you know, when he has first date records that nobody else saw, and LeConte sparrow.
And LeConte sparrow.
And then some of the other offshore birds I, in principle, should be able to get if I spend some time offshore, but that's not so easy to do. So, and then, yeah, it won't matter when he goes to spends time up in the interior and going to school or whatever, then he'll pick up a bunch of birds.
He's going to be way ahead of you then. Yeah. He's going to be way ahead of all of us then.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and plus he's like a little younger than all of us by a lot.
That's true.
So he's got lots of years to go. But it was interesting. We did have here, you mentioned the Harris's sparrow and the Dick's thistle, which I think the Dick's thistle has left. I don't know about the Harris's sparrow. It seemed to be sticking around for longer. But those are both new for Sitka. Or for me, I guess, Harris's sparrows have been reported in Sitka before, but it's been 25 years.
I mean, the Dick's thistle was a lifer. When I saw your text, I was like, what? No. What? So I was like, I have to come over to Matt's house because, yeah, that was a...
Well, thank goodness we were both in a position to drop everything and go.
Yeah, that was
I don't
a
know if we would have seen it.
I don't know if we would have seen it later either.
Well, the Dick's thistle was around for a few days. It was around for at least
to get
most of the week.
Yeah.
Well, at my house, it wasn't at my house,
but
it was at around the corner on Edelin Street. It was showing up pretty regularly there.
Now, why would it choose to go there rather than your feeder, which has literally a mound of seed
and a nice little roof?
Lots
of other little birds around.
I think Connor didn't feed for a couple of weeks, and so it emptied out, and nothing was there. And then he started again, but it took the juncos a few days. So it wouldn't surprise me if those birds showed up while there wasn't food.
A lot of food.
And so then they got settled, and they're like, this is familiar. And I'm not sure why they... Because we saw the Harris's sparrow in my yard once after that, that Sunday when they were both there. I never saw the Dick's thistle in my yard again, but they were regularly over around the corner. So I'm not sure what it was about that day that brought them over to my house where we saw, because we wouldn't have known that they were around unless one of us had happened to go around the corner and notice them, which is possible, but also I hadn't really been looking around the neighborhood that much. So that's the thing. You never know. That's one of the nice things about Christmas bird count is gets people out looking in places. You never know what pocket of yards, because a lot of people just like to feed birds and see the birds, and it's like they don't. And
they don't really,
all the birds.
Yeah, and they don't know if there's something rare. Or,
especially when they're just little brown birds, as these both are. They look a little different, but, you know, you could be forgiven for, those are kind of sparrowy birds.
I was getting mad because I couldn't see the Harris's sparrow, and it was right there. I just couldn't pick it out from all the other ones. So
it is something that, it's for those of us that get arguably a little obsessed about our lists and wanting to get more birds for our list, it can be a little frustrating sometimes when you're like, yes, but it was, you know, to hear about the bird.
Oh, yeah, and we didn't.
Days after it left.
And we didn't hear what your number is.
Oh, my number is 261. So 1, 2, 3.
261, 262, 263. I think Connor's definitely at 2. He might be at 264, actually.
So.
Because he's two ahead of me now, I think.
Oh, Lord. I'm never going to live this down. He's been trying to beat me for a while.
Well, he might have made
catch
it this
up.
Year.
He might have beat me. Oh, no.
I'm
going to have to take a trip somewhere quick. Let's get on a plane.
Okay.
somebody found a dead long-eared owl in Juneau.
I know. I saw that.
So, yeah, I'm trying to think. There was, I guess you could still go to ADAC and see if there was unusual
birds
or Asian birds reported there. Whipperswan.
Although... Victoria talked to Ivan when he was here.
He said they were really hard to get.
You had to be really sneaky.
Yeah.
I've never seen waterfowl. So this year we ended up going out to ADAC in the spring and in the fall. And we'd never been there in the fall before. The waterfowl in the fall on ADAC, they are so just freaked out about everything. You have to be sneaky.
I think there's a lot of hunting pressure on them, isn't there?
I don't know.
I mean, hunters go out there, and waterfowl hunters, and I think that's part of what's going on with the waterfowl in particular. I don't know about the whipperswans, maybe aren't as flighty, but yeah.
It was really hard to see the whippers,
too. Oh, even the whippers.
Yeah, 500 yards, you have to sneak up on them.
Yeah, and the one, the Pochard
was the same.
They really had to sneak up on that one, and very far away, the photos were taken very, very far away, so.
Yeah. The Asian rosy finch and the Eurasian sparrowhawk seem to be a little
those were
but
closer.
He said he saw, I think, both of them just once. They could not refine them.
Interesting. So
yeah. Well, so it made me lose a little interest in going out to ADAC in January if it's going to be that hard to bird. Mm-hmm.
And so
but
much
you never
colder.
Know.
Yeah. But that wing gets really cold in January.
Yeah.
It is interesting. I guess there was a pochard in Kenai Peninsula as well. Among kind of the Kenai River mouth, I saw reported.
Oh yeah, I saw that too.
So I don't know. There's who knows what might show up here too.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I never know.
We got the Arctic loon that one year. Maybe we'll see.
Could be things show up, but yeah, it's been. I mean, it's been a pretty decent fall. It didn't seem like there was. We didn't have our warbler influx that we have some years. I don't think there are any rare warblers.
I don't know that we've palm warblers ever seen again.
Oh yeah, there were palm warblers. There were two palm warblers. Behind the Pioneer home that we saw when some of the birders from Anchorage were here. And those are kind of unusual. Connor and I had seen one out on Kruzoff Island on the beach a month or two prior, or a month prior, I guess, month and a half. And then Connor saw a palm warbler by the Salvation Army. that's the challenge with palm warblers. They move around and they're just in random spots in the lawn or gravel or whatever, just poking around. And so it's hard to, they don't seem to have a spot where you're like, oh, you can go check these out. Mm-hmm. They just kind of are moving around. So I kind of suspect, and I'll definitely make sure to have a palm warbler picture in my slideshow because they seem to be fairly tolerant, especially if we don't get a bunch of snow, which, given the weather so far, seems like... May not be happening. We got some time left before the bird count, but yeah, and maybe by the time this airs in a week, it'll look very much like snow. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, those palm warblers seem to be fairly tough. They're picking around in the lawn, finding invertebrates and things. It seems like so. Mm-hmm. Seems like they're able to make a living here even as it starts to get colder. And the Dick thistle. I noticed, they winter in South America, so I was like, oh, Harris's sparrow seems like they could probably handle the cold, but I'm wondering if the Dick thistle is like, no,
he's
thank
like,
you.
Wait, well, I think I went the wrong way.
Yeah. So it was, it was kind of interesting, and you know, who knows what happens with birds like that, but...
That was a cool bird to see, though.
I've
never seen one, and it's very... it was just really interesting to look at the similarity. I mean, it's very similar to, a grosbeak beak.
Yeah, very big, heavy, big,
yeah,
big, beak. They're related to cardinals.
Oh, okay.
They're the same
I was
family
wondering.
As cardinals.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense then.
But and they're typically a Midwest bird. Uh-huh. I was surprised. So, but you grew up in the Midwest, but you didn't see them there.
They're not really, not in the area I was in.
Okay.
You know, Illinois and Wisconsin. We didn't really. I think if I'd have driven just over the Mississippi, maybe I would have had a better chance of seeing one. But
yeah. Yeah, I don't. I was just kind of looking at their range to see. And actually, Harris's sparrow is another one that's basically it nests in central, in the high boreal forest, like as far as the boreal forest goes in central Canada, so kind of Northwest Territories. And then they winter in the lower Midwest. So they're just kind of moving north and south across North America. But it's not, I think every couple, 3 years or something, there's a Harris's sparrow that shows up somewhere in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And that
they're
is.
Cute.
Yeah.
Cute bird, but way bigger than the juncos. I was surprised that it was not way bigger, but
it's
a little bit bigger.
It's kind of like the golden crown, white crown sparrow size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's related to those.
It was surprising to see that.
We saw them while we were doing the chicken run in Colorado.
Oh, grouse.
Yeah, we were looking for the grouse, but we saw
the Harris.
Oh, Harris the sparrow there. During migration? Would have been.
Well, I don't know. It was April.
Probably. It was probably migrating north. Yeah. Yeah, because I think they pretty much just nest in the high boreal forest, if I remember what I was reading about them. Kind of in a strip along there. If you look at the eBird map, there's like this concentrated strip of observations from up there. It's kind of funny. But yeah, it is an interesting quirk of geography and bird movements, that what gets us excited about a bird. It's like,
I know,
Harris the sparrows, you could see hundreds of them probably, no problem whatsoever if you go where they actually live. But
yeah,
we see one in Sitka, it's like,
just
yay.
Catch one accidentally.
But in the 90s, the one, it looked like the one that showed up here probably overwintered over multiple years. So, because it was like 4 or 5 years in a row, there was a Harris the sparrow. I think it was showing up at Margin Tadine's feeders, if I remember what they told me about it. There was also some records from the 80s, but we hadn't seen any since 2000 that I'm aware of, or none had been reported. But the ones in the late 90s, they would show up in the fall and then kind of be reported through the winter into the next year. And then that was like 3 or 4 years in a row. So, I kind of suspect it was one just showed up and it worked out and kept coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had white-throated sparrows doing that more. It seems like now they're pretty much every year we have a few.
Have you got one at your feeder?
There's been one at my feeder. So, yeah, we were talking about feeder birds earlier, and the main one's juncos. If you got seed feeders, juncos are coming, especially if it's near the ground. If it's a hanging feeder, chickadees, and the juncos don't find it, you know, chickadees probably will. Other sparrow, song sparrow, if you got any kind of thickets or shrubs, there's probably a song sparrow in your yard, maybe two or three. And then
we have to see what the pine siskin are going to do this.
Yeah, there hasn't been a lot of pine siskins so far. I've heard one the other day kind of flying through, but they can suddenly show up,
yeah.
And there'd be lots of them. Likewise
kind
with
of
the
like
crossbills.
Yeah.
I've heard crossbills. I heard a pine grosbeak yesterday off the cross trail.
Oh, really?
Oh, nice.
But haven't seen one in a while.
Mm.
But at the feeders, wrens sometimes are in yards, but they're not typically visiting feeders. But you would still count whatever's in your yard if you're doing a feeder list. And then there's the other less common sparrows. But if you consistently feed, then your white-crowned sparrow, your golden-crowned sparrow.
Cliff post a picture yesterday of
a golden-crowned sparrow. Yeah.
On his feeder. So, he must have one of those cool little feeder cameras, which I keep thinking about getting one, but I don't know.
Yeah, there's the those are pretty, you can actually get alerts on your phone when they get pictures, and I heard some folks talking about that. They're like, had mixed feelings because they're like, well, what if I'm away and there's a super rare bird that shows up in my yard?
And I know it's there, but I'm not.
I'm not there to see it. Then it doesn't count for my list, but it was there. Yeah, I can feel the tension in that, but I'd probably still rather know than not know.
I don't know.
Although it might keep me from going anywhere even more than an hour if I don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Blast. Look at that. Step 1 foot outside of the ability to get back home, and then the rare bird shows up. But so there are the occasional other birds. And I just recommend to people, if you're getting to learn the birds, learn the familiar ones.
Yeah.
And then look for ones that look different.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things the Anchorage people that traveled to see the Harris the Sparrow and Dick Sissel were commenting on was how many juncos we had. They were just like impressed with the number of juncos and then how different they all looked.
Really?
Because like, they're used to seeing slate colored juncos.
And
all look the same. So we get a few slate colored, but not that many. But we have the Oregon juncos. There's the dark ones.
Yeah,
there's the pale ones.
Yeah.
And so the light gray ones, and how contrasty the hood is with the rest of the body. And some of them are more approaching slate. So there's a fair amount of variability.
I grew up with slate colored juncos. And so I remember the first time seeing the Oregon juncos, and it was like, oh my God. They're just so fantastic compared to the boring little slate-colored juncos. But the slate-colored juncos are still cute.
See, and now I get excited to see a slate-colored junco because it's like, it looks, to get that just pure slate-colored junco, I'm like, how cool is that looking?
Yeah.
You know,
well, it is cool to see them now, but
yeah.
I mean, when I first came here, it was Oregon juncos.
It is funny how much the different one is like, oh, now I'm excited. And you know, familiarity breeds taking for granted a little bit, I guess.
Didn't you go on a... Well, we did when we were in Colorado. We saw pink sided were they or the there's two juncos that look very similar, and I think you were in Arizona and you
there's a gray headed one.
Gray headed, yeah,
that's one of them.
Gray headed and pink sided, I think, are very similar.
I spent a lot of time IDing the different juncos. It was kind of fun.
I mean, even though they are all dark eyed juncos, they're still
different forms. One of them, somebody I know in California had one of those show up at their feeder, and which mostly they have Oregon Junk was there, and it was like the color of the bill.
Oh, that alerted them to it.
Well, that was so the Junco looked very different than the Oregon Junco.
Oh, yeah.
So it was kind of very gray, but and a paler back, kind of brownish, reddish back. But the difference between these two subspecies, which were pretty similar, was one of them had a dark bill, the other one had a pale bill.
Mm. The red back.
Red back. That's
has
the other one.
The bicolored bill. So dark on the top, pale on the bottom.
And then
and it looks just like the gray-headed.
Which has an all pale bill or a,
correct.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, I knew there was something about the bill there that, but yeah, we don't, I mean, it would be cool if something like that showed up in principle,
yeah.
You know, something could wander up this way. But yeah, mostly we just have this variety of Oregon Juncos and then the integrates between Oregon and slate colored.
Sometimes some with a little partial.
Oh, the white.
Leucism. Leucism. There you go. Thank you.
Yeah, it's always fun to notice those ones as well. There are still some color banded Juncos around.
Oh, are there?
Yeah, there's one that was banded on Glenken Island in 2016 that was seen again this year.
Oh, wow.
So that's getting to be close to an age record for Juncos. Hmm. There's one in my yard that's been showing up that's banded in 2019. So in theory, there could still be, you know, that's something else to look for. I guess the other feeder birds that people like to keep here or keep feeders up for are hummingbirds.
Oh, yes.
And so it's always a little bit interesting to try and count those because they can move around.
Well, especially the ones in your neighborhood because there's multiple people over there that have feeders. And is this the same one? Is this?
Yeah. And they move fast.
Yes, so, they do.
And they can move between neighborhoods quite a bit, but I don't think they do for the most part. I think for the most part, they probably stick to their neighborhoods. So each kind of general neighborhood area seems to have its own set of birds is my guess, but it's hard to know. If I had to guess, I'd say there's probably easily over a dozen Anna's hummingbirds that are overwintering here now. I think Ketchikan might have counted 50 or 60 on a bird count in on a prior bird count. But yeah, their numbers have definitely gone up in the last decade or so around here. And probably in part because people are like, oh, I can have hummingbirds all winter.
Yeah, and now they make those fancy heated feeders.
Heated feeders. And so that's another one that if you are interested in participating but just hanging out at home, then the feeder count is a way to do that. Mm-hmm. And so if folks are interested in participating, we have the meeting, the pre-count meeting, which is not mandatory but certainly recommended, especially if you haven't done a count before. And that's Wednesday the 17th at the Raptor Center at 6 p.m.
And that's where we sign up for our routes.
And sign up for routes. But if you can't make that meeting, then they would contact
me.
You?
And send me an email, baldeaglevet@gmail.com.
So baldeaglevet@gmail.com. They can contact you and say if they're interested, can't make the meeting, you know, and figure it out from there, whether it's feeder count or the particular route.
Yep.
You all are pretty organized. The town has been, the road system has been divided up into various routes that are doable. I think in my experience, I mean, I generally walk for all the routes. And so like a given route's probably, you know, the smallest ones, maybe half hour. The longer ones, maybe an hour or two.
We really tried to make a variety of routes. So some of them are tiny and some of them are quite a bit bigger.
Yeah, and some of them are that you could mostly walk and some of them are ones that
most people would drive.
Drive
and stop and look. And,
Yeah,
I've done a couple of those longer ones that I just walked anyway. And most people just, you know, pick a route or two and then are just out for a small portion of the day. Mm-hmm. Some of us crazies are out like all day.
And we also always need people to go out on the boats. Majority of our circle is water.
Yeah, and that's highly weather dependent, of course.
I guess not the majority, but a large portion.
About half, yeah. It's like approaching half is on the water, and approaching half is in the mountains where nobody's looking either.
Right. So we do the road system and what we can see along the shoreline.
And
but it's also consistent because we're doing the same thing every year. Mm-hmm. So it is good data, even though we're not counting it.
Well, and there are more birds in town than there are upland. I mean, there are birds upland, but they definitely are concentrated in town. Diversity of habitat, availability of food, those sorts of things. There are birds that we know are in the circle that we don't always get, for example ptarmigan and owls that, you know, require sort of specific looking in some respects.
We did And we do have a lot of the trail system is in the circle, most of the trail system. So if you do a daily walk on the cross, one portion of the cross trail, and you would like to count that portion, that'd be great, because we don't always have a lot of people out on the trails either.
Yeah, and that, so the circle, I guess we could mention this, the Christmas bird count is organized around count circles. The center of our circle is basically at the airport. Mm-hmm. It's 7.5 mile radius, which takes us almost all the way to Vitsgarry, not quite to Vitsgarry Rocks out in the Sound, almost over to Kruzhof, but not quite. Kind of definitely, I guess the newest part of Catlian Road that's open would be outside of the circle, maybe.
I think
just
I
a little
have
bit.
To look. I don't know.
It's pretty close. It definitely includes all the paved road out that way. It goes about halfway out the road between Herring Cove and Bear Cove out the other direction. Mm-hmm. And all of Indian River Valley is in the circle. And then, over to, past Pirates Cove and, Cape mm-hmm. Burnoff down that way. All those bays on that sort of south of town are in the circle as well. And so a lot of those, it's just difficult to get over there and get those counted. And, we definitely, if we're focusing effort, it's best to focus it on the road system. I think it's most accessible and mm-hmm. have the most diversity there. I did get out one year and saw pied-billed grebe and 70 red-breasted mergansers or something in North Thoroughfare Bay. And
I was going to say the waterfowl seems to like to go like Nakwasina up in North Thoroughfare, just places where they're out of the weather a little bit more.
Yeah, so there would be things that, especially waterfowl, that you might see more of or find the odd species that's kind of wintering outside mm-hmm. of, the Eurasian widgeon or maybe a northern shoveler hanging out with the other waterfowl at Alukina or something like that. Those can be a little challenging to count even if you have a boat because they like to fly away pretty fast. So
the minute they see you coming.
Yeah. So it's a little challenging even so. But it's always something that's been interesting to me. But it's difficult to be able to just know because you got to have the weather to get out there. And, mm-hmm. and even when you have the weather, it's visibility is often a little bit iffy and they hide in the grasses and everything. So you never know. I just saw two green-winged teal at Stargavin in the estuary. I happened to see them moving through the grasses when the tide was up. So that was, and there you have kind of an elevated place to look. So that mm-hmm. makes it a little easier. But if you're sitting out on a boat looking towards the shore, it can be a little more tricky to see what's in there. So Christmas bird count coming up on the 20th, I guess that's the other part. So that's Saturday the 20th, mm-hmm. pretty much all day. Mm-hmm. Is there going to be, then they'll just be handing in the sheets to you at the end?
Yep. We'll do the after party. It'll be different location this year.
Different location. So have just a nice little time of some minor sociality. Get to go out. And if you have friends that you like to bird with, that's great. You can go together or you do it by yourself and then come together at the end. And it's always interesting to hear what people have been seeing and what their experience is. Some years the weather is not encouraging. Other years it's fantastic. So you never know until we get there. Mm-hmm. But it's part of our birding calendar, I guess, each year. And y'all are organizing it again for, I guess we said that at the beginning, almost 20 years now.
19, right?
19 years.
Yep. We're getting old.
Yeah. You're old enough to go to college now.
I know.
So you guys mentioned going to Colorado this year. Did you and ADAC? So those your big bird trips, bird theme trips, or did you have any others that you?
For me, that was Colorado. Colorado was a trip that I have been wanting to do forever because I love grouse. They're I don't know why, they're just the coolest birds in the world. Cranes are right underneath them for me, but. And I'd always wanted to go Colorado. You can see pretty much almost every grouse that there is in the U.S. So we saw greater and lesser prairie chickens, and luckily we saw some sage grouse just walking. We didn't get to see them on the lek.
City grouse,
who Victoria fell in love with.
He fell in love with
me. He fell in love with her.
So some grouse display in a group on a lek, and some grouse display individually. And so this guy was putting on a display and I couldn't see very well. So I crept up, down low, and kind of got behind this big boulder to watch him. And then he jumped down. So I thought that was it. And next thing I knew, he jumped on the boulder right in front of me and looked me in the eye and just started showing
displayed
off.
Displayed for her.
Yes. Fanned out his tail, blew up the pockets, the big red pockets in his throat, and was just going to town. Yeah. So I called him Romeo.
He was a pretty spectacular bird.
Yeah, I got some great pictures and video.
Yeah, and then I don't even remember how many days it was, but we drove almost all over the state of Colorado.
That was a 2-week trip.
If you've never been there, go. There's some beautiful things, beautiful places in Colorado. This was in April, yeah. The best, probably on almost one of the last days, we got something that we didn't think we were going to get to see because we were a little too late, but we got all three species of rosy finch.
Oh, yeah. That was cool.
Which was so cool to see. I don't even know which one is my favorite now, but the black, I don't know if they're black-capped or black-headed, or those ones are pretty spectacular. We just happened to be driving around this neighborhood, and we found these houses that had some feeders right across the way from each other, and we saw I don't even know what made us stop, just because it was a feeder and there were birds there, and then we saw the rosy finch, and it was crazy.
Well, we saw the one. And then we're chatting with other birders, which is one of my favorite things to do, is meet other birders when we're out. And as we're all just sitting there talking about our birding life, bang, there was the other one.
Yeah. Oh, and that was the fun thing. It was that couple we were talking to that they said they were on a mission to see every state bird in the state that it's the state bird of.
Yeah.
So... yeah.
And I think they said the Roadrunner in New Mexico was the most difficult one.
No.
Or was it?
Yes, because they would see it if they went to Arizona, but it's this, or something, or it's the state bird of New Mexico, and they would go into New Mexico, and they would just disappear, and they couldn't find that one. But yeah, that was kind of, it was interesting. It made us like think, oh, we could do...
There's just fun things you can do with
just
birding.
Just fun things to do, like to look at them in a different way.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be all about bigger list all the time.
Right, yeah.
Especially once your list gets big enough and it gets hard to add to
it. Yeah, yeah.
Different ways to bring in a little bit of novelty and excuse to get out and explore.
Yeah. Oh, and we did take the opportunity to try. There was a scissor-tailed or a fork-tailed flycatcher that was reported that was a little out of... season and range at the time, and I feel like we just missed it by a couple of hours.
I think we did.
We found the exact spot that it was at, and there was nothing, so I'm sure it was just moving through, but that would have been a major lifer for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was an incredible trip. I also did Arizona. So you did Colorado and Adak twice.
Uh-huh.
I did also Arizona, Chiricahua Mountains, and I did Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Yeah, I was there for another reason and then added 2 days on of birding.
I see.
And that was pretty fun. I got Jen and I have come up with some new lifer names. So we have decided to call lifers where we're got it, but we're not happy, unsat lifers for unsatisfactory. So I got an unsat lifer of a pileated woodpecker.
That would be our common snipe, too. He was pretty unsat.
Yeah, that was an unsat lifer. Where it was just not the look that we wanted. And if there's no photos, I'm generally unhappy. And you don't even call it a lifer if you don't get a photo, do you?
That's not true. Actually, that reminds me. Because I don't think of it. I said, I had three new birds this year. But actually, there was the Sora, which would
be four. Yeah.
But I didn't get photos of that, and I didn't see it very well. So it was very much unsatisfactory. And it's like going back and forth. I put it in eBird, so I'll probably end up counting it. But I didn't see it. I knew it was a rail. It was obviously a rail.
Well, you can count it as an unsat, and then when you see it better the next time.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. But it'll be the only bird that I haven't photographed in Alaska then of those on my list. And it took me a while to get to that sort of like... purity of list, I guess. and so it's a little, yeah, it's a little, let's just say I have mixed feelings about it. But yes.
And what was our other category? Unsat and?
I can't remember what the other one was.
Me neither.
But when I first started birding, I went with somebody that was like, they had a high aesthetic for what they would put on their list. I mean, mm-hmm. they weren't about maximizing count.
Right.
You know, that's the flip side where I heard it amusingly described as, did you see the bird well enough for me to count it? You know, kind of thing where it's like, they didn't really even care as long as somebody saw it well enough and they saw the flicker of whatever wing, you know, mm-hmm. if that's yeah, good enough yeah, for them, yeah. check
I mean,
and move on. So
it's kind of the joy of birding. You can do whatever you want.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Put whatever you want on your list. If you,
it's your list. So
if we're counting our unsat birds, I mean, I'm counting the common snipe because I saw it twice yeah. actually. And they were walking on the lagoon and I was having an asthma attack. So I went back to the truck to get my inhaler and I saw where the bird landed and I went over there and I swear to you, I was staring at that thing for 2 entire minutes and I didn't even know I was seeing it. And cause then it burst like snipe like to do out of the bushes. And I was like, so angry cause I was staring right at it. I should have just taken pictures mm-hmm, of that spot. Mm-hmm. Lesson learned.
Yeah, I do that a little bit sometimes. When we were there in the spring, they were winnowing, so it was like they
really?
Were both snipe, both Wilson's and common snipe were there winnowing, so they sound different.
Oh.
And then also I got like mediocre pictures of, you know, they're just up in the sky, so you're just, you know, but it was enough to tell which one was which. And yeah. I can't remember the differences.
I don't
now
remember hearing them winnowing in
no
the spring.
I don't either.
That's interesting. Yeah, they were at Contractor Marsh at yeah. that area. They were
maybe
up there.
We didn't spend enough time at Contractor
we
Marsh.
We spent a lot of time at Contractor Marsh because there was not much going on while we were there.
Yeah.
And somebody had reported a wood sandpiper there. And so Connor was very discouraged to keep tromping around.
He was hunting it down.
No, he didn't want to be. Oh, I was like, we don't have anything else to look for. It's like nothing showing up here. It's like at least this was, you know, maybe. So we kept tromping around there. Well, we yeah. spent probably a better part of a day just tromping around and then maybe part of another day as well looking. But yeah, it was you all, when you had your first spring trip there, had a lot going on. So
yes.
there was always things to go look
yeah,
at elsewhere. And the promise of possibility elsewhere was we're just like, okay, well, go see some Barrow's golden eyes.
Well, I do have to say the one thing that we are both very, I don't know that we're angry, but regretful about is when we went in the spring, for some dumb reason, we didn't take our boots, our waterproof boots, and there was a male gargany out there. And you had to tromp through some mush to get to it, and we never got to see it because...
You weren't willing to get your feet wet?
No, we did.
We did get our feet wet,
yeah.
and we still didn't find
yeah.
it.
What we're upset about is that there was a guide there, Aaron Lang.
With yeah. his group of people.
Had the scope on it. We didn't know what it was, but of course we knew it was something special
yeah.
by the way they were behaving. And we sat there and said, was it rude to go approach a group? In the end, we said, oh, we don't want to be rude.
We don't want to do it, yeah.
And then we talked to Aaron later, and he's like, be rude. Come,
yeah.
come see
come
the bird.
And yeah. so we've learned that we need to just forget about being polite and just...
Yeah. When you're out there like that, it's not like it's crowded, so...
Yeah, you know, no, and it was Aaron... Yeah, I asked him, because we stopped to tell him we saw something.
Yeah.
And I said, we asked him then, and he was like, oh, no, be rude. Come up and ask, I mean...
Well, when we were out there, the groups had been there the week before. There was... I don't know. I think there ended up being a dozen people in groups of, you know, individual sort of independent traveler birder mm-hmm. types in groups of like two to five or something like that. And most of us had radios and mm-hmm. were like radioing back and forth. Frank Haas was there mm-hmm. and then some other folks. And yeah, that year we did get Blacktail Godwit, which was a good, this is like the bird for a lot of them. Were like, this is definitely the bird of the trip. And Connor and I, because we'd never been there before, saw like common eiders and Kitlitz's murrelets and other species that are like regularly occurring there that aren't like unusual. That year there was a bunch of bramblings, which of course we've seen bramblings here. There were no hawfinches. It sounds like, generally speaking, there's similar numbers of hawfinches and bramblings that show up there, but not
yeah,
that
we
year.
Didn't see any hawfinches
not this year either.
Yeah.
This year, but I think they were brambling at one point, but not when we were there.
Yeah. So it's just one of those things. There was pine siskins, which yeah. was a good bird there.
It's hit or miss. Like, it just yeah. depends on depends on which way the wind's blowing and for how long it's been blowing that way.
We didn't have favorable winds for the most part. We did get tufted duck, which I've subsequently seen here. So, you know, it's and that's fine with me. I'd rather see birds here than elsewhere. So, like, I have my aesthetic sensibility about my list is, you know, the more it's in Sitka, the better.
I don't know. I mean, it's nice to see birds here, but I just enjoy Adak so much. It is one of the coolest places just to explore and see the history of the place. And my friend Dave came out there with us in the fall, and they just put a little show on at the dungeon last night, and he showed the video that he'd made of us on Adak, and it was pretty good. It was like a different way to see Adak, because he had his drone and you could see it from above and how the housing is all laid out. This is really cool. So, yeah, I don't know.
Plus, it was a sunny day.
Plus, oh my God, the most beautiful sunrise I've ever seen. I don't know that I've ever had a sunny day on Adak until then. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful.
Mm.
Dave climbed the mountain that day, so.
Yeah. Well, it is, I mean, it's a, and it's relatively accessible for out there places. You know, mm-hmm. you can find Alaska Airlines. Yeah. And there's.
Although I do have to say the roads are kind of, especially the one, like, we drove the road out to the Loran station and.
It's rough.
Oh, my God. It was way more rough than it was the first time. Like, Dave had to get out of the car and tell me which way to turn the wheels, because we didn't know how deep the puddles were.
Yeah.
The rocks are, yeah, it was. I was exhausted by the time we got to the Loran station, and then we had to drive back.
Yeah, it's a remarkable place. And,
it really is.
Yeah. It's be interesting to visit there in the summer. I mean, birding in the summer wouldn't be as well, but, you know, for weather and plants and things like that could be interesting.
I think the plants would be really cool to see up there.
Yeah. Wildflowers and such.
Because we've seen them in the spring before they've come up, and we've seen them in the fall after they've all died. I want to go there in the summer once.
See what it's like. Yeah. Well, we are getting close to the end here, so we should remind people that we have the Christmas bird count coming up. If you're listening to this as it airs, it should be airing on the 14th. So the Christmas bird count is on the 20th, so next Saturday. And the pre-count meeting is Wednesday the 17th at 6 p.m. at the Raptor Center.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you forgot to mention, isn't Connor going to do some bird walks?
The bird walk that Connor's doing happens earlier in the day today. It's in the morning.
Never mind.
Yeah, it's a little late for that. But yeah.
Also, I want to remind everyone to fill your feeders, please.
Oh, yeah. Fill feeders before leading up to, because it does take the birds a few days if you haven't been feeding. It takes them a few days to find it usually. And so, yeah, the pre-count meeting on Wednesday the 17th, 6 p.m. at the Raptor Center. I'll be doing a slideshow of birds. Victoria will, usually you do a little, you know, just summary of how the bird count works and a little bit of the history of it. And then it's an opportunity to sign up for routes. You don't have to sign up for a route or a feeder count. You can just show up because you're interested and curious. That's, you're welcome to do that, but also feeder count or a route to do the bird count. And then the count itself takes place on Saturday. And if you see an unusual bird starting Wednesday through the following Tuesday, I guess, we'd be interested to know, because we don't always see the unusual birds on count day, and we can add those into count week just as a notation that they were in the area during the time period of the count. So that's another thing to keep track of in the coming week, is if you see a rare bird, let us know.
And again, if you aren't able to make the meeting, but you will be here for Christmas bird count and you'd like a route, just send Victoria an email and we can.
So baldeaglevet@gmail.com
Correct.
Is the way to do
and
that.
And we can get you a route.
Well, anything else that we should mention before we wrap up here?
I don't think so.
I think we've talked enough bird for the day.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in. I look forward to the count next week. You've been listening to a conversation I recorded earlier this month with Victoria Vosberg and Jen Cedarleaf, our local Christmas bird count coordinators. If you're interested, I hope to see you at the pre-count meeting and maybe at the bird count. As always, I'd love to hear what you're seeing out there. Please feel free to send me an email, sitkanature@gmail.com, or you can get on my website, sitkanature.org, and leave me a comment there. Until next time, this has been Matt on the Sitka Nature Show, KCAW, Sitka.